Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NavaClub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Tim M. comes, and he's been sober, I guess, since about 2008. And I see him in meeting after meeting after meeting, and he does the deal. He shares from the heart. I've heard a lot of truth come out of his mouth, and I'm hoping that's what's going to happen tonight. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. How about everybody welcome him, Tim, to the podium?
Hey, everybody, I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Yeah, you know my sobriety date, 08. I had my last drink, actually, in February 08, and that's when I went to jail. And, you know, I did something to jeopardize that in jail in April, so I started over in April of 08. You know, I only told my story one time, and it lasted about 20 minutes. I got dressed up, you know. Well, first I told the guy, I said, you sure you want me to tell my story? I mean, it's going to be shocking. And he said, what did you do, have relations with farm animals? And I said, yes, I did, but I wasn't drinking at the time. But anyway, I was sweating and everything, and I was all dressed up in the suit, all that, and I was uncomfortable. So this is what I'm comfortable in. This is dressed up from where I came from. And I got, you know, I got a tie, too. So there you go. I did wear a tie tonight. And what I wanted to say is I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1966 in Georgia Baptist Hospital. And I grew up in a family of renegades, partiers, alcoholics. You know, I call them hippies, but really it was long-haired people in the woods smoking pot and drinking beer. And, you know, stabbing each other, basically. that wasn't, you know, like love and happy and peace, you know, hippies you might think of. You know, when I was 2 years old, I'm about to go back to this. When I was 2 years old, I was a fat little baby. I was like 50 pounds, okay? And I loved to eat everything, okay? And they loved to dress me up in corduroys, and, you know, and when I peed in my pants, you could hear me coming because it's, you know, my legs would be scrubbing together. You could hear me. But what I did, I don't know if I had a resentment or I was just hungry, but I ate every bit of my mother's epileptic, and I ate all her phenobarbitals, like a whole bottle of them. And I was out for 11 days, so I started real early. And, you know, it got worse. I mean, and the thing is, I was out for 11 days, that's what they tell me, until I moved my pinky. And, you know, we lived on Lake Circle in Decatur. It was in the woods. It was a dirt road around the lake. It was an old lake. It was probably not a man-made lake. There were seven houses around it, and they were old then. I mean, this was in the 70s. We didn't have heat. We had a fireplace, dirt floors, that kind of thing. It was pretty rough. But, you know, they were growing some wild stuff in the backyard, too. And let me say this. It was pretty – before we moved there, let me say this. You know, I OD'd and everything when I was two, but I can't remember up until I was four. That's the only normalcy when I was four that I can remember. My dad wasn't there when I was born. If so, I don't know where he went. But my mother, you know, married this man. He was a fireman in Atlanta. Same with Larry. And that was, he was straight-laced, you know, military type, you know, make your bed, you know, go to church, go to school, all that kind of thing. And I was four. That's the only person I ever called daddy until I was about five, almost six. And they went through a divorce. And I remember going from the straight-laced thing to my hair started growing. Okay, they got you know, into a divorce, and she got a new boyfriend, and they went to Jamaica, and left me there with his friend and my brother. You know, in our house we lived in with the fireman, he left. You know, they were separated, so we're there at the house, and he just started having keg parties. I remember this, you know, back when I was right around 6 years old, and his name was Larry Woody, you know, but they were gone for a month. I remember that. And, you know, I hooked up with an ice cream truck driver. The lady, she was a ice cream truck driver. So at 6 years old, I'm riding around with the ice cream truck lady, long hair, doing some things. my brother and I both. She thought we're cute, you know. So we run around. I mean, this the singleness of purpose is talking about alcohol. Alcohol is all through my story. If I don't include drugs in my story, then it's not my story. It's somebody else's story. Because that's just the way it is. There was alcohol all the time. But there was also other things. So I have to include that. I'm just leaving a whole lot out. And I just wanted to feel good no matter what, you know. But let me get back to it. So they were gone for a month. And, you know, we were just having all these parties and everything. Next thing you know, we moved to this lake and everything. And it was just like party. Okay. Until they were robbing drugstores. Okay. And we got busted, and our house got raided, and you know, we had to move to Wisconsin. Well, we went on the, my mother went on the run. I'm not talking about through the park or like, you know, like jogging with a neighbor. We're talking about on the run, like the lamb, you know, to Wisconsin. So we're here, my brother and I, and her boyfriend. You know, so we're going to Wisconsin. Between here and there, he had a comrade with him, you know, like buddies or whatever. And we stayed in this little farmhouse. I remember this. And they were fighting over the covers. He grabbed my brother's cover. His friend grabbed my brother's cover off of him. And my mother tried to protect him from her boyfriend's friend. And that her boyfriend's friend grabbed my mother. This is the middle of the night, in the middle of the woods between here and Wisconsin. And they say, you know, Scott, her boyfriend, stabbed this dude. Okay? Just stabbed me right there. So all I know is we wheeled him into a hospital on a gurney and kept going. So that's kind of life, you know, that I was, you know, style was in. And then we got to Wisconsin, and she stabbed him. And then, you know, he went to the hospital, you know, came back in a, you know, escaped from the hospital, one of those hospital suit things on, in Wisconsin, in the middle of the snow. They got to argue, she stabbed him again. Right there, in front of us. I mean, it blooded the snow, and the gurney, the whole thing. And, you know, I don't remember what happened after that, but, you know, he went away for a while. Then she got busted. Up there, and my grandmother came down and got us up and got us there, Wisconsin. This all happened in about a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. I was about 8 when I come back. You know, lived with her for a while. My mother was still in Wisconsin, locked up. And then, you know, I remember, I don't know how I remember all this, but I do. And, you know, it just continued on like that. My mother came back, and the party continued, basically, is what happened. And, you know, we moved around a lot, so I went to a lot of different schools. She liked to get alcoholic boyfriends. So, violent alcoholic boyfriends is what she liked. That's what she always had, you know. And, you know, I got a new daddy about every 6 months. And, they, you know, a couple of them liked to beat on us. And this one beat on us for so long. I think I was like 12 at this time. He beat her, beat me, beat my brother, beat us. You know, he liked to beat us naked. When we're naked, you know, beat us till he's tired, basically. Drunk. And one time they come in to try to save me, and I happen to have a baseball bat behind my bed. And I tried to kill him. In other words, I opened his head up with 28 stitches. You know, it was my time to do that, because he turned his head when they came in to save him. Save me or whatever. When they came in, first thing that happened, I remember my mother started to do something, and he slapped her. Then my brother, my older brother, Tony, grabbed him like you. He grabbed him against the wall like that, and I reached behind the bed at 12 years old and tried to hit the floor. That's why, I mean, I don't feel good about this. It haunted me. This is the worst thing I think I've ever did, hurting someone. But back then, they didn't have child abuse, you know. They didn't have, like, when they come in, you're abused. They have where, you know, you messed up, you're going away. And so I went away. That's what happened. She basically chose him over me, you know. And that hurt. But I went to different children's homes in Atlanta, you know. I went to all kinds. I went to Sequoia. I went to Redan. I went to Avondale. I went to Heritage High School. I went to Wills High School. I went to Osborne High School. Went to Rome High School, West Rome High. I mean, how do you learn something going to all them schools? You know, being sent around all the places. So, but I was drinking. I loved to drink, man, and party. I was just born into that. So it was just like, that's what I did. You know, I was crazy. I mean, could you imagine? It's kind of like I got in fights when I started into school, like every day, because it was kind of like taking this wild caveman into first grade and said, "Here, y'all, you take him into school." And I'm like, "Ah!" You know, like it was here out of here. I'm like, kids, you know. So I just started getting in fights. They didn't like me. And, you know, they say we feel different, bodily different. I was different. Okay? I was different. That's what it was. I looked different from all the other kids. I didn't like. You know, y'all were all different. Y'all were like, preppies, and y'all had money. And I'm a hippie out of the woods, like, from partying all the time. Basically, when I went into elementary school, so I got in a lot of fights up until I was 12 years old. I was kind of violent. You know, hey, how you doing? I'm doing pretty good. How you doing? You know, pretty much. This is how it was. You know, they made fun of my hair, all that kind of stuff. And I say, look at your hair. Look at your lip. Look at your hood. Look at your mouth. You know, but I mean, I beat up my big brother. I beat up his friends. You know what I'm saying? I was just crazy. I got beat up too. You know, I didn't go past third grade. You know, but I did go to second when I was in first looking for his friend. I was just that way. I was kind of crazy. But, you know, and it didn't take much for me to snap when I got 12. But long story short, it got worse. You know, I went to them children's homes, and, it was weird because, nobody really wanted you. You know what I mean? It seemed like you go to somebody's house and they're like, oh, they're doing it for the state. They get a little bit of money or something. And it's really, you treat like an orphan, basically. So I got shifted to these different children's homes, and I ended up in, now one was pretty decent. It was United Methodist Children's Home on Columbia Drive, okay, but they put me in the disciplinary cottage right off the rip, okay, so what I did was, I learned to drive at 8, okay, talking about giving somebody a spiritual awakening, I gave somebody a couple of those when I was driving at 8 years old, but I stole a car at 12 to run away from United Methodist Children's Home. Yeah, I busted out of their room and all that stuff, and this little kid took this kid with me, and he lived in Athens, and he had long hair, and he was my buddy. We both had long hair, you know. We both did crazy stuff, and I drove. He knew how to get to Athens, but I didn't. But I knew how to drive. But as soon as we got in the car, he wanted to drive. Okay, he wanted to drive, but you know, I was like, you better let me drive and leave, but I'm not going to show you nothing. Blah blah blah. I was like, okay. So he gets to drive. He's like all over the road, man, about to wreck and everything. I was scared. I had a spiritual awakening right there. And, I was a little bit more dominant than him, so I said, that's it. And made him get out of the, get over in the pastor seat. We made it all the way to Athens, and, they turned us in. We got his house, his parents' house, after we washed their dishes and cleaned their house. But, we are, it was all kinds of crazy stuff going on back then. But then I ended up at a place called Elks Aidmore Children's Home in Conyers. And that was kind of like normalcy. You know what I mean? It was like, it was pretty good. I started like growing there a little bit. Okay. You know, I mean, I got out of special education. I started getting to regular classes. And, you ate food every morning. You had a chore. It was like this normal thing. It seemed like it was normal. Getting kind of normal. And I was there for about 3 years, I guess, until you get kicked out of there if you get caught with the girls. Yeah, but we taught the girls. They had girls on campus, and we talked them into coming down to our cottage. And, anyway, I didn't get none, okay? But I had to pay for getting some. In other words, they basically told me I had to beat this slab, after school. I used to go to work after school and make a little money. But no, I had to come after school and beat this slab. I beat that slab for about four or five days. I didn't make a dent in it. I was pissed off. I'm leaving. I didn't get laid. Nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I went back home to mama. Went back home to mama because I could leave at that time. But, it was normalcy. You know, that was a chance there. But you know what? At 18, I mean, really, I was just after the girls, really about that age. It was like I wanted the girls. I didn't know how to talk to girls. And, I know drinking, when I drank, it helped me talk to women. That's what it really come down to. I think that was my whole crutch about drinking to begin with. Because I knew when I drank, I could talk to women. And, that was when it started. When I was around 18 or so. I really didn't drink that much. I smoked a lot of pot and stuff. Drank here and there, you know. But when I could get, and then I finally got to get in the bars. See, back then, there was a grandfather clause where you could get into bars at 19. And that's what it was. And then, it was 21 for other people. But it was something weird about the grandfather clause back then. At 19, I could drink. in bars. And I realized that I could drink in bars. And, boy, I started getting a list of women. You know what I'm saying? It was like that was a game me and the guys used to play. Let's see how many women we can get. And I couldn't do it unless I drank. So that was the whole deal. I'd drink before I went to the bar. And it was the whole thing about drinking. It wasn't about the drink. It was about the women. I had to drink to get the women. Then I'd lose them. But, you know, but I had a whole list of them, you know, by the time I was 21. And I lived in Sandy Springs, and there's tons of bars, you know, in Sandy Springs. I went to American Pie. Boy, I got a whole list of women out there. But, you know, I mean, this is what it is, okay? The thing is, it was that last woman on the list that got me. You know, she was the last one I put on there. And, you know, I ended up dating her. You know, she had what I want, and I was going to England to get it. And, you know, I took certain steps, 13 at a time, all the way. And, you know, we dated for 4 years. But I had to get rid of the list. That's the thing. You know, she was the last one on it, and she didn't like the list. And, you know, it was the last one I met, actually. And then we got rid of it. But, you know, I wish I had that list now. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. But the thing is, you know, I got, like, tons of DUIs. Got, like, a DUI. The thing is, I would drink, you know, I'd drink before I went to the bar, and I would just overdrink. I get there, you know, I'd arrived, and now I've met the women, everything, but then I'd overdrink. I couldn't stop drinking. I'd just drink everybody on the table, you know. Be the last one there a lot of times, and sometimes the first one out of there, you know, a lot of times. You know, like, I was kidding about the you know, farm animal thing, but, you know, I woke up with something that looked like a farm animal a couple of times. I ain't kidding. But, you know, you're talking about incomprehensible demoralization. It's, you know, because I have overdrank, you know. But, you know, the thing that happened was I just wouldn't give up, even after 5 DUIs, you know, I wouldn't give up. But what I did was I got to a point where I just really lost everything, you know. Let me just say this, you know, I ended up getting back with my high school. How many high schools you go to? She went to a high school I went to. And, you know, I think it was really the only time I fell in love, because I didn't drink at that point. I probably would have did anything for her at that time. I quit smoking pot and everything. She didn't like pot. She didn't like, you know, I just did everything she asked me to do. And, you know, I loved her. You know, we ended up moving apart. And it hurt, you know. And then I was resentful towards women and stuff. But I tried to rekindle that relationship back in 2000. It was in 99, you know. And she'd already been with someone else, had another child and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that I could try to make that same feeling be, you know, that it was. And it turned out it really wasn't. You know, it was just totally different. I wasn't happy. You know, she'd been used up. I was pissed off still. But you know, that's just my self-centeredness. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I felt ripped off because, you know, she already had another child or something. That was mine. You know, I don't know. But anyway, we did have a child. His name's Jacob. You know, he's 11 today. But it's just short. He has epilepsy, too. My mother had it, and it went through me. I guess he got it. And it seemed like a lot of problems were happening. You know, that was happening. And then, you know, I worked for a construction company estimating contracts and that kind of thing. Right down the street, I had a pretty good job. We had a house in Norcross, you know. We didn't get married. I did get drunk one night, stand up on the stage at a bar and ask her to marry me, you know, but I felt bad. I wished I didn't do that the next day. You know, I was, like, drunk and asked her to marry me. But we never got married. But the thing is, I would go and leave and go to the bar and, you know, I wouldn't come home and stuff like that. I would stay out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Just wasn't really messing around with her or anything. I just didn't want to be there. I wanted to be drinking and shooting pool and all that. I'd come home at the last minute, hit the bed, and go to work the next morning. And then it came to where I had to have knee surgery. And I did have knee surgery. Had screws put in my knee. ACL went out. And I got on some pills, man. I got on some pills. They gave me Percocet, Percodan, all that stuff. You know, I was like, all right. milk that doctor to death, boy. I mean, I just milked him. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, this is it. This makes me feel better. You know what I mean? And just I was spiritually sick, is what it really comes down to. I didn't realize it, didn't care, any of that sort of thing. I didn't know. Something was always wrong, you know, of course. But I look back on it now, I was just spiritually sick. I shouldn't even have been with her. I was just my self-centeredness. You know, I just had to be, you know, with somebody or something. And I used her up, it seemed like, you know. So what I really did, I shouldn't have did that. The thing is, I got addicted to those pills. And then I started, you know, I told them I couldn't sleep, and so they gave me Xanax. And I started taking that. I had Percocet, Percodan, Xanax, alcohol. I mean, I just had it all, okay? But I didn't have a life. I was drinking alcohol with all this, you know, a lot. And not working. I was at home, you know, my knee's hurting. You know, I think I was supposed to be back to work in 6 weeks. I think I stayed around the house 6 months. You know what I mean? Just milking the whole thing. I just got addicted to those pills, and I was just miserable. Finally, she said, "You got to go." And I said, "Oh, you know, why? Blah, blah, blah. Can I stay to Christmas?" You know. She said, "Yes, but you got to go then." And, you know, I was on my pity party. And so I packed my bags up and left Christmas morning, you know, and went to my mother's house. And I wanted to run the car off into, you know, off the bridge. I thought about it, but I didn't want to. You know, I thought about it. So this would be good, you know, but I didn't ever really want to kill myself. I never really got to that point, you know. But I didn't want to live. I felt like I was just, I don't know, I felt really bad. I went to my mother's house in Douglasville. And, you know, I just continued to party from there. And I got hooked up with this other girl that liked to do other things. That, I would call it freeze-dried alcohol. Let's call it that. And, you know, she had a son that liked to do freeze-dried alcohol, too. I had to smoke freeze-dried alcohol, you know. So we smoked a lot of freeze-dried alcohol. And, you know, I stayed away from mom's house and everybody else. And then she got busted. And I had nowhere to go then, but I had to take her son to court for some reason. And I was taking her son to court. And while we were gone, she got busted with a lot of stuff. Luckily, I wasn't there. I was busted, too. And then she called me from the back of the police car and said, "I'm busted." And I told her son, while he came out of court, he busted down crying and said, "Please take me to an AA meeting." Like, what? I don't, I didn't know what. I'm like, "Oh, I'll take you to it." Okay. I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? So I took him to an AA meeting at Triangle. All right. And I forgot to say something. I forgot to say this one thing, man. Back in 2001, I did try to do something. You know, I told her I didn't try that hard. I just checked myself into. Before we got, I left the house, I did check myself into Turnaround Recovery and went through that for 9 months. I did do that, but I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't take any steps. I didn't do anything. I got my ticket signed. I paid my little dollar. I said, "Hey," I didn't hear nobody. I didn't hear nothing you guys had to say. I felt I had them wrapped. I had guys working for me. You know, I started a little business back then, a remodeling, you know. And had everybody working for them, the staff loved me and everything, as long as I paid them money, this and that, you know. They just didn't bother me. But I got to go out of town and work. And when I did, I drank, you know. I didn't drink at Turnaround, but I drank when I left. And I came back and I felt pretty sick. But I got my certificate and everybody thought I was cured. But anyway, I did meet somebody in Turnaround at that year. And let me say this, I ran into him when I took this guy to the meeting at Triangle. And I looked, he goes, "Hey, Tim," he's all sober. He used to be getting high and drunk and everything and turn around. I was like, "What are you doing?" I'm sober. He's like 4 years sober and everything. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, like, I'm not sober, you know. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to get high. This guy's here for AA. You know. What do you think I'm doing? And so that's what I did. And then I went back to Mama's house. And I slept. And slept. And slept. But the guy gave me his number. I took the number, you know. I slept. And, you know, Mom didn't like me sleeping there. She wanted me to get up and do things. Like, fix this, fix that, fix that. I'm like detoxing for 3 months partying or 5 months of partying. You know, I'm like, what? I'm like passed out. You know, I'm detoxing. Like, and I called the guy. I said, come get me, please. You know, help me. I need some help. And it was a guy named Lee from the Complete Abandoned Group. Okay? This is the guy that come to Douglasville and got me from my mother's house. And I knew him. He used to work for me back in 2001. And he was in turnaround. 2001 is when it was. And, you know, he started this group, all this kind of stuff. I'd never really been to AA. I came here then, and I never did anything, actions, none of that stuff. But they took me in when I had nowhere to go. I'm going to say that. And I had nowhere to go. I didn't know. I didn't have no money and have nothing. I lost my house and all that, you know. And actually, you know, it was really hard there. It was hard. I mean, but I, you know, it was just to a point. I was, what am I going to do? I really just wanted all my stuff back. It's really what it was. I don't know if I was ready or not. I don't think I was. But I was ready to get my stuff back. And they showed me how to do that. They showed me how to stay sober. You get sober, you get your things. But they showed me how to stay sober by taking these actions. And it started out with prayer, come to a lot of meetings. And that's what I did. Did that for 3 months. And then I said, I got some of my stuff back. I got a job. You know, I got a little place over at Harry's house. And, you know, I was good to go. Then I wanted the girl. Because everybody else was getting them. And they were coming to the house and everything. So I knew I couldn't get a girl unless I wouldn't drink. It's just the way it is. I mean, I couldn't talk to them. I'm like, how you doing? You know, they're like, what's wrong with you? you know, but I drink. It's like, what's up? But anyway, it worked too. But I got me, I went to a Halloween party that time and I met a real witch. A real live witch. I'm not kidding. She even did the burning bowl, the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? She was a witch. But she was a rich witch. She's a real witch. Witch. Whatever. She had 3 Pomeranians and they never shut up. All right? Neither did she. I've got a head full of AA, a body full of liquor. You know, I'm like, I rolled the back of my head. She wouldn't shut up. She's always talking. I mean, abnormally. Like, you ever shut up? If I wouldn't, she'd get on the phone and talk to somebody. You know, it's like, talk to neighbors. Talk. And the Pomeranians. The fucking Pomeranians. They wouldn't shut up. I'm serious. But I don't know how to quiet them down. I had a whole gallon, you know, half gallon of vodka. Always there. She was rich. She was always there. But I finally exploded, man. I finally exploded toward that shot. I just got tired of her, period. I really didn't want to be with her. And I got sobered up, and I was like, give me something to drink. Okay, I want to be with you. I want to get sober. I want to be with you. Give me something to drink. Okay, well, you're okay. You know what I'm saying? It was like that. And, you know, finally, you know, I just quit having sex with her and everything. I was like, it just wasn't working, man. I just couldn't put up with it. It was just too much. And then she had her ex-boyfriend come over and do something with her, and I caught him on the couch. That pissed me off because I didn't want him to get my alcohol or my stuff. You know what I'm saying? And he was getting it. And I destroyed the house. The police came out. You know, I mean, I broke a bunch of stuff over in Brookhaven. I like drink and break stuff, it was like. And they come and got, you know, let me out of my own recognizance. I came back. I said, oh, there's no big couple. Quit drinking, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I drank again, destroyed the house again. You know, just went crazy again. And they took me to jail. The same thing, the domestic. I didn't beat her up. I think I pushed her or something. She come and got me out of jail. And they won't give me a bond. And she said, she'd give him a note. He's really a good guy and all this stuff, you know. Please, y'all want my man back. You know, basically what it was. And, you know, I got money. and I can pay for it. That's what it come down to. And she had a lot of it, and she paid for it. And the thing it comes down to is, you know, I went crazy again. I drank again, went crazy again. This time they let me out of jail. Okay? This time. You know, I'm not proud of any of this. You know, this was over 4 years ago. What happened was, they didn't quit slapping me on the hand. I'd already been to jail a bunch of times, you know. And what they did is compiled all my misdemeanor charges. It was all misdemeanors. And they said, well, we're just going to get, plus her, she might have got pissed off too that last time because her cousin is a judge in DeKalb County or something. So they might have had some, you know, proactive wording or something, some proactive stuff going on behind the closed doors. Or, you know, I had a public defender, and I think he helped me get some time. I don't know. Anyway, I'm really kind of grateful that I got that much time. Really, I thought I was getting out, okay? I thought I was getting out, but I didn't. I didn't get out. You know, they turned it into... I thought I was getting out like in 1 year. I was in there for almost 11 months. So you're getting out, and he's like, next month, Tim, by my lawyer and all that. And we finally got in front of the judge. He said, we've changed our mind. 5, serve 3. Oh, God. So that's when I think I just kind of let go. You know what I mean? That's when I think I let go. And I think, I had reservations. If they would let me go, then I would have drank. But long story short, I ended up going to do some time in prison. And it was really it was a lot better than DeKalb County where I went. I mean, I wouldn't recommend going there or anything like that. I'm just going to say, you know, it's probably the best structure I could have ever got. You know, I needed structure. I needed to be sober. I needed, get my shit together. And I went to a place that offered a lot of programs. And, you know, one was the GED. I got into that immediately, you know. And I got to a faith-based pod, which I learned something from AA, basically something spiritual. I need to be doing something spiritual. And that's all they had to offer, so I did that. Which I never did that before, but I took a Bible study course and all that kind of stuff. And got my GED within 3 months, and then I enrolled in a college course. And took some college courses, and then I started an AA group in a pre-release center. Yeah, I started out with two guys, ended up 29 people. And then as soon as I got out of there, I walked out with, I did 27 months with 24 months sobriety. And I was scared. That's why I was sober, but that didn't want to keep me sober. I knew it wouldn't keep me sober. I was scared. I didn't want to go back to jail. I don't want to be, you know, I got this accomplished, you know, all these things, you know, my head's clear. So I ran straight back to complete abandonment, actually. But I wouldn't even have got out if Mark Burf, the owner of Turnaround, wouldn't have paroled me out, signed me out. He knew me back from 2001, and I called him. I had nowhere to go, and he gave me a chance, and he let me go to Turnaround with no money. And but I went to complete abandoned first because that's where the seed was planted. And I taught them guys, and then I went in to Turnaround and everything. And you know, I couldn't do both things at the same time, both programs. And everybody has their own way of doing things. But I had to go through what Mark was wanting me to do, so I did it. I don't take anything from complete abandoned. They helped me, so they gave me actions to take. It was about prayer and helping others, and that's a big part of, I think, what this is. And, you know, I went through Turnaround and, you know, I completed that. You know, I came out with a monitor on my leg, you know. And, you know, I was on parole with a monitor, and they come by all the time, you know. And what complete abandonment was showing me. First, I got the upper room. I got me a little clock to time myself sitting quietly. I had the Bible. I had a big book. And I would get up and hit my knees and ask God to help me stay sober, you know, in the morning. And I would sit out there on that porch, and I would read a couple of pages out of the big book. And then I would read something out of the upper room and follow what it suggests, the scripture and that. I mean, it's just an action I took. I'm not a holy roller. It's just some things I did. Then I sat quietly for 5 minutes until the timer went off. And it was the loudest 5 minutes there was, you know. I mean, I tried to sit quietly. And I realize how much I think. I think an awful lot when I sit quietly. Now, I realize how much I think. I didn't know how much I thought. My head was out to kill me. I came to immerse myself here. 9:30 meetings, and Julie was here all the time. I'm here now, but a lot of people were here, and I just stayed there. I just went down here, came there, came here, came there. That monitor, and then somehow I got a job from some people in AA here. I mean, I had nothing, and somebody in AA gave me a little job to do. They said we're only going to pay you $7 an hour to paint something, and I've paid it for $35 an hour before. And I'm like, what? And I thought about this, and then they told me this person's in AA. I go, oh, well, this could be some service work, man. I went over there, and they gave me 10 the first day. And, you know, since then, those same people sort of helped me get my license back, my driver's license, and then I started getting some contracts. You know, helped me get equipment. Some other people started coming around, my old people that I made amends with, some big realtors and stuff. I mean, I had Brookhaven locked in when I had a business. I mean, I had the homeowner association locked in. And I went over his house drunk. I mean, I had the whole association locked in. I mean, I can do stuff when I'm sober. When I drink, I'm in trouble. But with help. I have to have help in everything I do, actually. It's not me. These are gifts I'm given. And when I ask for help, and you know, it comes. I mean, I'm not anything. I mean, these are just gifts I've got. And what the gifts I've got is today is, you know, I've got a sponsor. His name is Robert Bell. I mean, I had Dave. He helped me. You know, I had he helped me a good bit, and the people in his group. And there's a lot of people here that's helped me. But then I got Robert as a sponsor. I like what he had to say, and I could see. I have to have somebody explain something by the book to me, because I got to look. You know what I mean? You can't just say blah blah blah. I won't even hear you. You know, I have to be like, or by the book, and so I can understand you. I could understand Robert. You know, I could listen to what he had to say, and I liked what he had to share. And I've taken the steps with him. You know, and the thing is, I'm not going to say that I'm not going to take the steps again another way. Slower or whatever. I want to say I felt like I needed to take steps. Wow. So, because I was scared. There's people kind of jumping around. Another sponsor I had was kind of jumping around, and it scared me. I was like, I'm going to drink if I don't do this. You know, I think I am. So I've got someone that's going through the steps, so I did it. But that doesn't mean that, you know, whatever you're doing to stay sober today, man, don't stop doing it. So I got to say about that. What I'm interested in doing is really I'm open minded to people getting sober and whatever they're doing, as long as it's not asking God to help them to do it. You know, I'm interested in that, no matter where it's coming from. It's just the way it is, you know. Because this was I believe helped me. You know, I believe I've asked God to help me, and He's talked through other people help me, and you know, I've asked. You know, I've talked to, you know, said prayers, and his prayers have been answered through other people. And it's weird. It's through other people in AA. You know, I don't have a direct connection with God. I don't know. I don't put a face on it, on my higher power. I think that it's here. The Spirit is here. God's here in this room, in every seat here. Everywhere you look, God is here. That's just what I believe, and then you can't put a picture on it. It's a spirit. And that's just what I believe. And I never went to church. And that was just by taking simple actions. I found AA has showed me what faith was. I never knew. I always said, yeah, I got faith. Yeah, I believe in God. I mean, I said that because I thought that's what you wanted to hear. You know what I mean? I thought that's what society wanted to hear. I did, you know, bullshit my way through society. But once I actually got down and started hitting my knees and taking actions, I've seen things changing, actually changing. And, you know, that's what's kept me coming back. You know, I'm not grateful, like doing backflips because I'm an alcoholic. I'm not happy to be an alcoholic, grateful to be an alcoholic. I am grateful that there's a solution to my alcoholism. I'm happy that, you know, there's something, you know, here. For me, you know, so I don't have to drink and kill myself. A solution, a substitution, or whatever you want to call it, you know, it's amazing what this AA has done for me. But I could drink tomorrow if I don't continue to do it. I mean, I'm doing pretty good right now, but I don't need to do real damn good. I need to stay new to this because I am new. I mean, I drank for 30 something years. Yeah. And I'm 4 years old. I'm Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Tim. We believe you. That was very convincing. I'm proud of you, buddy. I've been pulling for you for a long time. It was great to see you up here. Thank you.
baby, let me hold the door. We'll go and get my guitar, so I can play for you some more. I'll see my mom.